center, and coming in is Lube. Hulenbeck centered it. McDonald scores! Matty McDonald!
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
And he's stopped by Markstrom from point blank range.
Here goes, put it in the wind column!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hour two underway on this Monday, September 19th. Yeah, Steinberg, Logan Gordon along with you, coming at you from our Sportsnet 960 downtown studios. Welcome to training camp week. It's finally here, Logo. Fitness testing on Wednesday, on the ice Thursday, first preseason game on Sunday. Young Stars Classic is now all wrapped up from a Calgary perspective. They wrapped up Monday afternoon with a 5-3 loss to the Winnipeg Jets. They end up going 0-3 in Penticton at the South Okanagan Event Center. They lose 3-0 on Friday to the Canucks, 3-1 to the Oilers prospects on Saturday night, and then on Monday a 5-3 loss to Jets prospects to wrap it up. Again, I don't know how much results matter. I mean, I know they all say we want to win, that type of stuff, but when it's all said and done, it's all about the individual performances. And one of the guys that I think people were really interested in watching coming into this event was Cole Schwind, because here is the third member of a blockbuster trade coming back to the Flames going back to July, and he was the prospect coming back in the Matthew Tkachuk trade. And the guy that, you know, we don't know as much about Cole Schwind as we know about Mackenzie Weegar and Jonathan Huberdeau. And the first time to see him in game action, albeit against prospects, but still, first time in game action for Schwind, who played center the entire event, and I thought actually looked pretty good. And now gets an opportunity to use these three games in Penticton as a bit of a springboard into main camp, where I think a lot of people hope that he can be pretty competitive and maybe fight for a spot as main camp goes along. Cole joined us following Calgary's final game at the Young Stars Classic on Monday and wrapped it up after a 5-3 loss to the Jets.
I think we came out strong. Obviously, we had our chances there, and you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. Sometimes pucks don't bounce your way. I thought the effort was there. It just comes down to a bit of, you know, whether or not it's bearing down on a different chance or, you know, a little bit of luck there. But I think overall, the effort was there tonight, and, you know, it's just a tough one to swallow.
Overall, I know not the results that your group wanted in the three games you played over the weekend, but when you take a look at the opportunity to get some games in, the compete level, those types of things, I guess take us through the three games the group played and what you and some of your fellow prospects can take away from this weekend.
Yeah, you know, for all of us, it's you know, a good chance to gear ourselves up for main camp and try to make a push to either sign contracts or earn a spot on the big club. And you know, I think this week, you know, it was beneficial for all of us. You know, that work ethic was there, getting to, you know, kind of get back in the swing of things after the summer. You kind of just taking that time to make sure the body's feeling good again after that, you know, the high repetition kind of stuff, and, you know, hit the ground running as you're going into main camp.
How can you take these three games? How can you use this weekend and kind of use it as a springboard for main camp later this week?
Yeah, you know, obviously this gets you game ready. You know, make sure that your mind is working at top speed, you know, making sure that you're ready for games. And obviously, you know, make sure that the cardio is there. You know, like it's just beneficial to get back on the ice and then, you know, obviously make some new friends here at the prospects and go into camp together and, you know, all try to perform together. It's a good start.
What was it like throwing on that Flames jersey and getting into some game action for the first time as a member of the organization?
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, like it's very cool just to put that C on for the first time. I love the red, and you know, I want to wear that for years to come in the future. And you know, after this tournament, I understand there's a lot of work to be done. You know, if I want a chance to be there, and you know, I'm ready to put the work in and see where it goes from there.
Final thought for you, Cole. You got into the three NHL games with Florida last year. As you head into this year's main camp and another opportunity to crack an NHL roster, what did those three NHL games kind of show to you in terms of what you'll need to do to be in the NHL on a more regular basis this year?
Yeah, it definitely taught me what it takes to be there. You know, for a young player, it's it's not an easy task to be there and to stay up there. These are people's jobs, and you're playing against grown men in night in, night out. And for me, it's just kind of be open-minded, make sure that I'm doing everything I can to put myself in the best position to be there. And if that means that I need to develop elsewhere and really get my reps in and kind of learn the game from that side of things, that's what I'll do. And I'm just ready to start work with the organization and take the next step.
That is Cole Schwint, Flames prospect, following Calgary's final game at the Young Stars Classic in Penticton. They fall 5-3 to the Winnipeg Jets on Monday afternoon as we continue on Flames Talk Hour 2 with Pat and Logan, wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, and more. And all of a sudden, for a guy like Cole Schwint, for a guy like Jacob Pelche, those are probably the two guys that I think we talked about most on this Young Stars team that might have the best chance of knocking on the door in main camp. Pelche after the year that he had, Schwint after the year that he had in the Florida organization, both guys coming in with a decent amount of fanfare. It just, with what we talked about last hour, with Milano on a PTO, with Eakin on a PTO, with the potential of Brett Ritchie coming in on a one-year contract, it is going to be a crowded atmosphere and a crowded landscape for a young player to come in and make the team. And I loved Cole's attitude that you just heard right there. He is very much coming at it. I'm going to work. I want to show him I'm really ready to work. It's going to be an uphill climb. And there's nothing wrong with that because, man, if you make that uphill climb, that's a positive story. And if you don't, well, go back to the American Hockey League and be ready for when your recall comes because injuries happen, and that recall will most likely come. Cole played center this entire Young Stars Classic. He's a right shot center, which I think is interesting. I'm really curious to see how some of these younger players react going into main camp now that they've got these three games under their belt, because all those guys, all the top prospects, played all three games.
Well, and I think it's not only going to be us watching it, I think it's going to be a main focus for Daryl Sutter and the rest of the coaching staff heading into training camp is to see how they've used this extra time around Mitch Love and the coaching staff that they've had over the last couple of days to their advantage and to how they've become, more prepared for this. Because let's be honest, no, does a regular NHLer maybe need this? No, but for guys like Pelche and for Schwint, I can't help but look at this and say, this is a chance for you to get off on the right foot, to really use this as a chance, especially for Cole Schwint, who's new to the organization. Jacob Pelche has been in the organization for a couple of years. He's got a year with Mitch Love as his coach, a very successful first year, I might add, with Mitch Love as his coach. How much has Cole Schwint, really gone to the coaching staff and say, hey, look, what are you guys looking for from me? What can I do to stand out? What are the things that I need to be proficient at to do that? We've seen, and I don't think it's by accident, Pat, a lot of what the American League team now is in Calgary is about preparing guys to be as successful as possible when they go to the NHL club, right? And that's, maybe not a direct mirror of what Daryl Sutter is trying to do, but I think it's a mirror in terms of fundamentals and the basics that you absolutely have to have right if you're going to be an NHL call-up or an NHL regular for this team. So you've gotten that opportunity to latch on to some really important people the last couple of days. And yeah, results are what they are. I don't think anybody's...
They matter about as much as preseason results.
Exactly. And that's, saying something.
Players will tell you, coaches will tell you all day long that, yeah, it doesn't matter. We always want to win. We always want to win. And that's very admirable. But truly, preseason results don't matter. As long as you're ramping up for the regular season, as long as you're using these things to get ready, as long as players that are competing for spots are putting that 100% on the... That's all that matters. You cannot convince a 10-year NHL player to give anything close to a regular season effort in the preseason. It doesn't matter how much they talk about, we got to go and simulate. It doesn't happen. I've watched preseason games for too long. I know it doesn't happen. I'm sorry. Nazem Kadri and Elias Lindholm and Chris Huberdeau. Tanev and Jonathan Huberdeau are not going to be giving 100% in a preseason game. They're going to be doing all that they need to get their bodies ready and their game speed ready for game. So, yeah, anyway, tangent. But no, the results do not matter. Yeah, it would have been nice to win. And you want to win, all that type of stuff. But really, it's about some of these individual performances and guys controlling what they can control.
100%. And that's, I think, going to be the biggest thing for any of these guys. If you see a Schwint or a Pelche or whoever take that step and even, you know, even be around for a full training camp and get into a bunch of preseason games, I think you'll go back to, and I think the coaching staff, when we talk to them, will go back to, hey, he continued what he did well in those practices in Penticton, in a couple of those games in Penticton. That was the start of it for him, and he was just able to continue it. It wasn't day one of training camp that was simply the start of it for them.
Right.
It was Penticton, and it was the young stars, and that's how they were able to get themselves in this good position.
I will say that, I'm trying to think of the right word, maybe underwhelming from Pelche. I didn't love him in those first two games.
No.
I thought he was much better in the third game on Monday afternoon. And, hey, that's maybe the most important one because that's the last one. But do you need to be incredible in these three games?
No.
Maybe not. Although I do think it kind of gets radars going with the organization. Like, again, 2018, two rookie games against the Oilers. Best player on either side in both games is Dylan Dubé. I think that got the radars going. And I remember getting reports while the team was in China about, okay, yeah, we're paying attention to what this Dubé kid's doing bad. We're paying attention. And then he carried that over into training camp. I don't know if we saw exactly the same thing with Pelche in these three games. But you know what? There was one player that kind of did do that for me. And I came away from the three games that this player played probably the most impressed of any Flames prospect. And yet, I do not see a clear path for him to make the team out of training camp, and that's okay. I am just far more interested in 2020 first-round pick Connor Zary coming into this year's camp than I have been in the last two. I guess 2020 didn't count. 2021, I was interested in him, but we didn't really get to see it because he got injured in that first rookie game. Zary was really good in these three games. Very dynamic offensively. I thought he was a factor in all areas of the ice. I thought he displayed far more confidence than I've ever seen him in very limited viewings at high levels. I'm really interested to see if Zary can be a guy that maybe makes some noise in training camp. And I'm not suggesting that he can be the type of player that makes enough noise and can just, I mean, he's a center iceman, right? And maybe the wing at some point is what gets him into the NHL, but I don't know. He's played mostly center at the American League level. He's probably being projected
played
as a center in the
tournament,
NHL.
Did he not?
Played center in this tournament on the line with Pelche for basically the entire time either Klapka or Dewar was with him. I don't see a path for him to make the team, but that's okay. What I am really interested in seeing is if Zary can show that he's a little bit closer to NHL pace. And maybe he can be one of those prospects that gets the long look. You know, he's that, you know, there's the first cut, there's the second cut, and after that second cut, there's usually only like two or three guys left, and you're like, okay, he's getting a long look, right? Like, he's sticking around. Walker Dewar got that look last year. We've seen other guys stick around longer. If Zary can do that, I think that's a really, really successful step forward training camp. And this will be his first full training camp, because he didn't get one last year because of the injury. He is the guy, even though I don't think that there's actually a real way that he ends up on the NHL roster, he's the prospect that I'm actually now most interested in coming into main camp.
Well, I think these are interesting, maybe not, to your point, maybe not so much for this season, but I think they'll be interesting towards the narrative of a year or two down the line when we have the more legitimate conversation about, you know, when they should be peaking to be, you know, on the fringe of an NHL roster or forcing their way into that conversation. I think these will be the conversations and the things that we remember and look back on more when we have those talks than anything. And I think, you know, last year was a tough one for him. We talked about that injury, and I remember listening to your chats with Mitch Love during the season. It took him some time to get his feet wet again because he'd only had the 9 games of, you know, AHL experience the year before. So now he's missed training camp. Now he's trying to get up to speed at pro hockey level. Didn't have, you know, nearly the amount of time his teammates did. But by the time it was all said and done, he was a very important piece of what Stockton was doing last year.
He's basically their number two center.
Exactly, right? And that's someone that Mitch Love had a lot of trust in, had a lot of good things to say. And look, you've got a first-round pick pedigree at a center ice position. There's always going to be a level of intrigue when it comes to those players and what they can do. Back that up with some results in a couple of years. And look, Connor Zary's 20 years old, right? I think when you're talking about a guy that's, you know, even 22, or God forbid, if he's 23 and he's pushing for an NHL spot, it's just not the worst thing. These development years and the time that he's going to spend in this organization is going to be so valuable for him. And those things can be a big, I mean, look at Uso. Those things can be a massive deterrent to what you're trying to do and how you're trying to, you know, plan your path towards an NHL future when you have a significant injury like that. Because make no mistake, even the guys that don't make training camp, you're right. Go to those guys that had longer experiences, what they were doing, and, you know, the success that that led to them having in whether
it's
an NHL
season. It got Walker Buehler his NHL debut last year.
Exactly, right? I think there's so much good that can be built off of that, even if it's not an NHL game, but just setting you up for success and having Daryl Sutter pull a 20-year-old Connor Zary and say, look, Connor, we're sending you back to the A. We just don't have a spot for you right now, but it's not because of how you performed. It's, yeah, you know, it's because we've got NHLers and we're going in a different direction, but we want to see you carry this into your year with Stockton. Fight Cole for that first center spot with the Wranglers this year. And hey, we're across the hallway now. We're going to be keeping even closer tabs on you. We're going to know if you continued what you did in training camp. And those are the things that can lead to call-ups, that can lead to your first NHL debuts, right? I think those are just valuable times to be within the organization and around other NHLers that sometimes these young guys don't get. And when you miss it like Connor Zary, I guarantee he spent a lot of this offseason excited for training camp because it's something he missed out on last year.
Young Stars Classic is all done from Penticton. Flames go 0-3, 3-0 loss to Vancouver, 3-1 loss to Edmonton, and on this Monday, a 5-3 loss to the Winnipeg Jets. It's a wrap up the event with the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers and the head coach of the Flames in Penticton. Here's Mitch Love wrapping things up.
Obviously, it wasn't the result we were looking for, but our effort was much better. It was our best effort in the three games. You know, I thought some of our veteran players really led the way in that, in terms of the compete level and the expectation we were looking for, and you know, our guys, you know, give them credit. Their goalie played real well, especially in that second period. You know, probably deserved a better fate, but you know, we had a few costly turnovers that ended up in the back of our net as well.
Is that a promising sign, though, to see, you know, the veterans not only talk about it after the first two games, but then kind of, you know, deliver on it as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were looking for just more urgency and passion and compete level from our group today. You know, regardless of the result, we just wasn't there the first two nights as consistent as we would have liked. And for the most part, our group brought that today and, you know, just came up a little short.
When you know, you're starting to obviously throw a lot of rubber on net, he's seeing a lot of them, stopping a lot of them, but you know, did you sense anything different about your group? But you know, you're down 2-1, even though you had, I think, you know, at that time it was over 35 shots.
Yeah, I think we, you know, the big message going into the third period was, you know, those secondary opportunities. I think you alluded to it. Like, I thought he had, 22 shots in the second period. He's seen a lot of them, you know. But if you look at our goals, we had, you know, Klapka was in front of him for both of them, I believe, like, where he had to look around, and we needed a little bit more of that in that second period to maybe break the dam, especially in our power play. You know, we had some good looks, but it was a promising effort for our group. Unfortunately, a loss, and we're leaving here 0-3, which isn't good.
Overall, I mean, aside from the results, you know, what is the biggest takeaway for you in the group, or maybe just a message as you kind of take this thing back to Calgary?
Well, I think it's, now things are going to really ramp up, right, for these young guys. So, you know, going into main camp, you know, that's the urgency and compete you got to have, whether it's practice, NHL exhibition game, to, you know, impress their coaching staff up there. So, it was good. I mean, it was, I know I've said it for a couple days, it's a learning experience, but there's a lot of things here. As a coach, you stand on that bench and you watch that, some of the junior traits of players, you know, stick details, you know, the compete level at both nets. There's a lot of things that you can teach with moving out of this thing. And that, you know, for the guys that will be with us in Calgary with the Wranglers, there's lots to work with there.
Just one last one for you. I'll just ask you about Christopher Sedoff, because he's an invite guy, yeah. Obviously. Has some offensive upside. We see, you know, in the Western League, yeah. Tied for seventh, I think, in D scoring. But just, you know, you saw some of that maybe on, yeah, his goal there, just a little drag and pull.
Yeah, I'm, you know, for me personally, I'm familiar with him. When my time in Saskatoon, him and Red Deer, he's a good hockey player. Like, yeah, I liked his camp here. You know, he was physical. He's hard to play against. He's a headsy player, and he can shoot the hockey puck like he's shown today. So I think he's impressed well here for himself.
That is Mitch Love, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. He was the head coach of the Flames at the Young Stars Classic, all wrapped up. From the South Okanagan Event Center in Penticton, last guy that Brendan Parker of Flames TV asked him about there was Christopher Sedoff, defenseman of the Red Deer Rebels, who was probably the most noticeable tryout player for the Flames at this Young Stars Classic. See if that can maybe get him some traction as we move on closer into training camp, as he'll likely be at camp on an invite as well. Mitch Love and the Flames go 0-3 at the Young Stars Classic. We were talking a little bit about kind of just there's going to be competition. If you're Pelche, if you're Schwint, if you're trying to make noise and put yourself in the mix for an NHL roster spot at a camp or at any point this year, there's going to be some competition. You know, there's we know Sonny Milano's coming to camp on a PTO. We know Cody Eakin's coming to camp on a PTO. Trevor Lewis is re-signed. Sounds like Brett Ritchie is close to signing a one-year deal as well. We're waiting for official word on that, as our boy Eric Francis has that out there today. So here's some of the reaction to, you know, this conversation. In hour number one, Logan and I don't know if it was an argument, just a discussion about Brett Ritchie and what he brings. And
I don't think it was an argument.
No, it was, but I do know that there are some who are very much against Brett Ritchie coming back if that ends up happening. This says, we're deep, boys. Can't wait for the season to get going. I may not be in the majority, but I'm stoked they got Ritchie back. I was dreading him going to the Oilers like the rumors had said. This says, 3 goals, 1 assist in 41 games is not an effective player when talking about Ritchie. Brett Ritchie's effectiveness is, he's not a high-end finisher.
If you measure effectiveness solely in points, then no.
He is not a finisher. That's
but
just
that's
not what he is.
Also not how you evaluate any. And look, and I'm a guy that's pretty neutral on Brett Ritchie. Even I would say you can't simply measure effectiveness in points. There are other aspects of the game that you have. You can't. You just simply can't. There's more to the discussion than that.
Where he moves the needle is more on the underlying stuff when it comes to scoring chances, shot attempts. The way Daryl Sutter wants this team to play in a fourth-line role, I think Brett Ritchie's a good fit, personally.
Trevor Lewis doesn't put up a lot of points. I'd say his effectiveness is pretty felt.
This says, Ritchie was great in the playoffs, size, power, tough, and outplayed many others. This says, love bringing Ritchie back. He's a big physical force on the fourth line, and that's important in the playoffs. This says, Flames need his physicality. They aren't tough enough as a playoff team. And this one, when it comes to, these are both more, not just about Ritchie, but about adding more players and having more competition. This says, especially with the AHL team being local, I'd rather have lots of up and down. And this says, I've heard all day the Flames won't be as healthy this year. How is it bad to have experienced NHL players in the American League ready for a call-up? And that's also part of it, whether it's Ritchie or maybe it's Eakin or I don't, like, there are... Maybe it's Stone. Maybe it's Valimaki. There are going to be names in the American League this year, Meloche, that have significant NHL minutes under their belt that could be called upon if injuries hit. And having guys with that type of experience and having those types of options when you need them is never a bad thing. With Logan Gordon, I'm Pat Steinberg. This is Hour 2 of Flames Talk, available on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's Hockey Station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hour 2 of Flames Talk on this Monday with Logo. I'm Steinberg. How about that announcement from the Jets over the weekend? Blake Wheeler stripped of the captaincy in Winnipeg by new head coach Rick Bowness. That is a way to make an impact on your new team. That's a hello, I'm here. Things are different now. I'm taking the C away from Blake Wheeler. Welcome to Winnipeg.
They did it so politely. They did it so politely, though, Pat.
Sent out a release, and then there was a media availability. And look, I love it. It is a bold choice from a new head coach. I'm very biased. I'm a big Rick Bowness fan. I don't know how, like, honestly, I don't know how effective Rick Bowness is going to be as a head coach in Winnipeg. The guy has coached for years and years. He is, like, you know, when you're talking about Daryl and Bruce Boudreau, like, we're one of the most experienced coaches in the NHL. Guy has been coaching either as an assistant or a head coach for decades. I'm not trying to suggest that he, like, the game's passed him by or anything like that. Hell, he devised a pretty good game plan for the Dallas Stars and almost upset the Flames in game in round one of the playoffs. That game plan was rely on our ridiculous all-world goaltending performance and just keep relying on that.
It's a bold strategy.
It almost worked. I don't know. I don't know if Rick Bowness is the right coach in Winnipeg, but I am biased. I hope he's the right coach wherever he lands, Winnipeg or elsewhere, because I love listening to him talk. He always is, like, he's very, I don't know, he's very affable. He's a guy that is easy to root for, in my opinion, as a head coach. But I just, whether it was Rick Bowness or Logan Gordon as head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, I love the call to make the change because the Winnipeg Jets needed a change. Everything that we're led to believe, everything that I'm led to believe from people I talk to, and I've got some people that I trust in that market, like, that room went sour. And it's been going that way for 2 or 3 years now. And Blake Wheeler is an intense, competitive, very proud guy. And there is a rather large feeling when you talk to insiders around this league that he is asked out of Winnipeg. And so when you're talking about a very intense, sometimes combative or surly guy, I don't want to use those words because they have negative connotations. I'll just use the word intense. When you're talking about an intense guy who's always dialed to 10, who also has, as we're led to believe, asked to no longer be there, that's not a guy you want wearing the C. It's just not that's not the type of player that you want wearing the captain C. If he hates losing that much and he doesn't want to be there and he's that intense, it's just a bad mix. So I think it was the right call by Rick Bowness. And here's the other thing. Here's one thing that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt. Blake Wheeler was very, 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 very much Paul Maurice's guy. I can count on like 7 or 8 hands how many times Paul Maurice went to the wall publicly for Blake Wheeler, talking about how good a captain he is, how he's my guy, how he works the... And I'm not saying he's wrong. But Paul Maurice stepped down because that fit was no longer there. And credit to Paul, now the head coach of the Florida Panthers, he saw that it was time. Like, it was time. It wasn't working. The message had worn thin. Not a lot of coaches are able to step away. He stepped away. But it's time to go in a different direction in Winnipeg. It's time to let the Nick Ehlers of the world and Andrew Kopp and a younger group of players maybe get that team back to where they were. I think that's a really, really smart call from Rick Bowness to move away from a prior regime and to put your stamp on your new team.
Here's two things I'll say about it. The first is a continuation on your Paul Maurice thing. When Paul Maurice steps down like he did, who do you think tries to fill that void of leadership in the room? The captain's going to try.
Mm-hmm.
Right, if Blake Wheeler and Paul Maurice were attached at the hip like we think they were, I have no doubt that Blake Wheeler would have tried to fill the void and fill the voice that was lost. And that's not even trying to be a shot at Dave Lowry, but that's, I assume, what happened in it, that there was a void of leadership and a void of, you know, getting the message through that probably tried to get filled by Blake Wheeler. And did he go about it the right way? I would say it's probably fair to say no, because he's not the captain today. Here's the other thing I would say. If it's true at all that Blake Wheeler has asked out of Winnipeg, and that's a conversation he's had, I don't care what kind of captain he is. I don't care if he's a quiet leader. I don't care if he's intense. I don't care whatever adjective you want to use to describe him. You aren't my captain anymore. It's as simple as that. To me, at least. Maybe other people feel differently about that. But I'm sorry, as soon as you have 1 foot out the door and are looking to somewhere else, you're not my captain anymore. As soon as your teammates or anybody else gets wind of that, and how would they not? You spend the entire year with them. They're not stupid. You lose every bit of accountability that you possibly have. And Blake Wheeler's already in a tough spot as a captain, Pat, because when you're that intense and when you're that... I don't want to say in your face, but when you're that kind of guy, you got to back that up. And when it's Blake Wheeler and you're physical and you're fighting guys, and guess what? You're putting up 91 points a season. You're backing it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard for somebody to question your leadership or anything else. But if you're going to be a 40 or 50 point guy and that's how you're going to go about your business, it's going to be harder. But for me, the basis of it stems right then and there. If you don't like what's going on here, or you don't see yourself as a part of this organization going forward, you're not my captain.
Yep.
And the Jets went about it in a very professional way, and a very, I'll say, you know, I think professional is probably the best word for it, but a very open and honest way of, hey, you know, we're just doing this, we're reevaluating, we want to expand our leadership core in the room, is what I believe the statement said. That's, to me, that's them being real nice about it, because you were the captain of the team and you've been here since the organization came back, and that's great. You have earned a lot in Winnipeg, but I'm sorry, Blake, you can't sit here and tell me that you're still committed to the team and you're committed to being and doing the things that a captain needs to do if you're looking elsewhere.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody can be surprised that you put those two things together in my mind. Absolutely, you should be looking to change up the leadership core, and you should absolutely be looking and giving the opportunity to someone else. And guess what? If Blake wasn't willing to do that, that wouldn't surprise me either, right? Was Blake willing to sit there and say, hey, look, yeah, Kyle Connor, I need you to do a little bit more here. I need you to step up and be a little bit more of a leader. I don't know. Blake Wheeler doesn't strike me as that guy. He strikes me as that this is on me, and I'm going to do everything myself to be the leader kind of guy. So I think it's a massive step for this organization, and I think it says a hell of a lot, you know, before training camp even starts, Pat, before that relationship builds day in, day out, Rick Bowness and his new staff sat there and went, this is a problem, and we need to change it now.
Here, this is what Rick Bowness, the new head coach of the Jets, had to say over the weekend.
We have a new coaching staff, completely new staff. He had to give us time to talk to the players, get to know the players. But changes don't just start with the coaching change. We're going to change the way we play. We want to be a much more aggressive team. So the coaching has changed, the style of play. We're going to initiate a more of an aggressive, pressure-oriented system and be a harder team to play against. And now is with a new staff, it's a good time to take a look at changing the leadership of the room as well. So. It took some time, but again, in fairness, we got a whole new staff. We don't know the players. I can tell you this, that, and I've said this before, I was very encouraged all summer talking to the players. Like, this is a much, much tighter group than the perception of the room. And so that was very encouraging for me. Also, you could tell their tone and their wording that they wanted to accept more responsibility. They're all very disappointed in what went on last year, but that's behind us. So now we have changes, and that just included the way we're going to go about the leadership of the team.
So that was Rick Bowness, and here was Blake Wheeler.
Yeah, you know, there was some surprise, I think, you know, to – you know, having kind of your first conversation with a new coach was surprising, but I've had time to let it sink in. So, you know, he gave me a little headway. So it's, you know, had time to process it.
That was Blake Wheeler over the weekend after being stripped of the captaincy in Winnipeg. Somebody texts in, what's going on there? Maurice quits. Pierre-Luc Dubois seemingly wants out. Wheeler and Scheifele rumored to want out as well. I don't know what's going on with Scheifele. Everything publicly, he's been very adamant that any of that talk is false, but we still hear it. There's enough out there on Wheeler that I firmly believe where there's smoke, there's fire. Like when you've got Elliott talking about, yes, I fully believe that Blake Wheeler has asked out of Winnipeg. I don't know what the hell is happening with Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much said he's walking to free agency in 2 years. That's a very upfront thing to say 2 years before you can walk to free agency about how you feel with an organization. Yeah, look, I like you guys, but there's literally nothing you could do, no money you could pay me in the next 2 years to make me want to stay. Thanks.
Yep.
Wow. Thanks, Pierre. Really appreciate your support. The Scheifele thing, I don't know. That's a bit of a different one.
Yeah, maybe they are able to make a couple of changes and truly hand this team over to whether it's Nick Ehlers, Kyle Connor. They've got some decent young talent on the back. Like, this group went to the Western Conference Final in, 2018? Yes, 2018. So a little bit going on more than 4 years now when they were at their peak. Western Conference Final, took a 1-0 series lead on Vegas and then lost the next four. But they, like, that was kind of the peak of this Winnipeg Jets core group. The Wheelers, Scheifele's, Patrick Laine was still there. Like, that was their peak. Hellebuck, so on and so forth. And they really haven't been able to...
haven't really come close to that.
They've had some disappointing playoff exits. They are coming off a playoff, like a non-playoff year. I think it's probably time.
Think the group is starting to wonder if they've plateaued. That's what I really think it is. I think the group, some of the guys are looking and saying...
Well, Blake Wheeler is no longer not an 80-point guy anymore. And I don't know what Scheifele is. I still think there's lots left in Scheifele. And I think that's more of a mental thing with him than anything else. I still think Scheifele's got 85, 90 points in him. But it's been a little while since we've seen that. So maybe I'm wrong on that front. But I still think that on the Scheifele front. I think Nick Ehlers is a budding superstar. I think Kyle Connor's a two-time 40-goal scorer.
You and me still love Kyle Connor. We went through this last year before he scored 47 goals. And both said, look out for Kyle Connor. 25 years old, that guy can put the puck in the net. There's good pieces there.
50. He's not officially a two-time 40-goal scorer. He got 38 before the season. He was going to be a 40-goal scorer, then the season got shut down.
You've got Morrissey, you've got Pionk.
He's a four-time 30-goal guy.
Hellebuck's only 29.
They are one of the most fascinating teams in the Western Conference for me because they have got the ability to be very good. They also have the ability to be a complete and utter disaster this year. And I'm curious to see how Rick Bowness handles things in his first year as head coach and trying to start something new in Winnipeg. Couple of things on the Dallas Stars front. First of all, a trade today, as I'm actually really interested on this Monday. Nils Lundqvist has been traded from the New York Rangers to the Dallas Stars. Lundqvist is a first-round pick going back to 2018, right-shot defenseman who played 25 games with the Rangers last year, very highly thought of right-shot defenseman, and he's on his way to Dallas in exchange for a first-round pick. So Nils Lundqvist is now a Dallas Star, and that really intrigues me because they will play him and play him a lot. Look at the way that they have handled some of their young defensemen. Heiskanen, Esselinde, like... if they feel like you're close, Jim Nill will say that guy's playing. And I bet you Nils Lundqvist plays like 80 games for the Dallas Stars this year. It's a really interesting trade to me. Right shot D, and you know, that's not the area that they've got one of the best in the NHL. I quite like in Heiskanen. I quite like Lindell, but they're a little thin there. Lundqvist is a really interesting ad for them, just 22 years old.
Well, they replaced two interesting parts of John Klingberg. Lundqvist is Swedish, and he's a right-shot D, just significantly younger and significantly cheaper without, I don't know, 700, 800 games of NHL experience mixed in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big price to pay, Pat, for a guy that's wasn't a high first rounder, by the way, going back to 2018. He was 28th overall, so that's a lower round first rounder in a draft where, look, you don't have to tell the Calgary Flames and everybody else around here about how people feel about the 2023 draft class and how teams were doing everything they could to avoid giving up picks in that particular upcoming draft. For the Dallas Stars to shell out that kind of pick for him, I think tells you a lot about where, and that's a team that just got booted in the first round. There's no guarantee that that pick, I don't know, do we feel the Dallas Stars are miles ahead of where they were last year? I mean, they're kind of battling for a playoff spot. If you're the New York Rangers, guy that doesn't fit into your plans right now because you've got some similar guys that are probably ahead of him on the depth chart, in a good draft class, I think you take that deal all day long.
If you're the Rangers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Stars, I think you're right. I think they're going to play him, but I think there's going to be a significant amount of pressure now for him to come in and perform right away.
Well, I'm really interested in terms of, if there's one organization that sinks or swims with young defensemen, like Dallas is the one that comes to mind right away. And it's not like, look, Miro Heiskanen was a superstar the minute he put on skates in the NHL. So
yeah, that's an easy.
That one was easy, right? But I just look at what they've done with Hakanpää, what they've done with Lindell.
Lindell was a good example.
They've got, oh yeah, you're 20.
Have fun.
You're playing top 4 minutes. Have fun, exactly. And right now, they've got Heiskanen can play both sides, but he's a left shot, and Lindell's a left shot, and Ryan Suter's a left shot. I bet you this guy plays top 4 minutes for Peter DeBoer all year long as a natural right shot defenseman.
Yeah, would it stun you? Beat out Colin Miller and Yanni Hakanpää as the premier right shot defenseman on the Dallas Stars next year? Wouldn't surprise me.
And look, I quite enjoyed, like, I thought Hakanpää was one of their better players on the blue line in the Flames series. Thought he actually made a difference for as that series went along. But I wouldn't surprise me if midway through the season or a month into the season, Heiskanen and Lundqvist is your top pair in Dallas. Because you're like, okay, well, we got this 22-year-old right shot defenseman. Heiskanen can elevate a brick. So let's give it a he'd make me look like a good defenseman. That's saying something. He is one of those guys that can elevate anybody in the NHL.
You as surprised at the price tag than I am, as I am?
A little bit, just knowing the year. The fact that it's this year's draft, like the 23 draft, that is maybe what surprises me. But I do know how highly thought of Lundqvist is. And it didn't sound like the fit was there from a Rangers standpoint. He's going to get far more opportunity. Like the Rangers are in a spot where they feel like they're pounding on a door to win a Stanley Cup all of a sudden. And I don't think Lundqvist is going to play there. He's going to play in Dallas. I can kind of see what they're doing in that regard. But yeah, a little surprised that it was a first-round pick in 23. That was a little surprising.
Yeah,
but
I mean, this is a very
highly thought-of young man.
Yeah, 100%. It's also now 4 years since he's been drafted, and he's only accumulated 25 games of NHL experience last year.
Now, a big chunk of that is because they kept him in Europe.
Yes, 100%. But there also wasn't, you know, he wasn't knocking the door over on some less than stellar Rangers teams. Let's be honest. The Rangers team that was last year is not the same group that's been there for the majority of the time that Lundqvist has been in the organization.
A lot of times, though, when you're talking about younger Swedish guys, they prefer staying in Sweden.
And there's no path there for him right now. Fox is a right-hand shot. Truba's a right-hand
exactly.
shot.
Exactly.
Braden Schneider's there. I think Braden Schneider's a righty. At least two. So, I mean, you're looking at the top four is plugged for you, at least unless you're willing to play the other side.
Yeah, Schneider is a right shot.
Okay, so there's three. And I believe Schneider was a higher pick than he was.
I like the acquisition for Dallas, and I think it's a good return for the New York Rangers. And
for a guy that you didn't even have pegged in your top six anytime soon?
And you get a potential, you know, top 10 or 15
top 20
first
pick
round
maybe
pick?
In yeah. a draft that people love? Yeah, I think that you're probably pretty happy with that return. And I don't think it's been a surprise that he wanted out either.
Lindquist. Nils Lundqvist. Very, very highly thought of. Nils Lundqvist traded from the New York Rangers.
Top 10 protected, apparently.
It is top 10 protected, which makes a ton of sense. By the way, Elliot Friedman not painting the rosiest Jason Robertson picture in Dallas. So the Stars are, I like that acquisition for them, but they still got to get Jason Robertson signed. Are they close? Here's Elliot on the latest 32 thoughts.
I just heard there wasn't much going on here. I'm so careful of making proclamations because everything can change with one phone call. Robertson's in a bit of a different place than those other DR. He's more established. He just had a 41-goal season. You know, to me, if the 8x8s to players like Thomas and Kyrou make Robertson think he's worth more than that, which he probably is, you know, it's going to be tougher for Dallas to do this deal. You know, I sat down with someone from another team and we were looking at Dallas's cap situation. They could do like an $8.5 to $9 million deal. He also said I could see why they wouldn't. Because, you know, that means you're taking up all your available cap space and you're ensured that Hudobin's going somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
I still think that there's a solution to this, which is 3x7, 3x7.5. But as we're sitting here on Sunday night, I had no reason to believe it was close.
That is Elliot Friedman on the latest 32 thoughts. Wherever you get your podcast, came out for release on this Monday. Get it done, Dallas. Whether it's a bridge or not, sign the deal before camp. If you want to build on the season he had last year, and if you want Robertson to build on the season he had last year, don't set him back by having a missed training camp in the preseason.
I don't get it.
Sign the deal.
I get he has no RFA rights. I get it, but it's one of those unique situations, Pat, where despite him not having any RFA rights, he holds all the leverage, because if he doesn't play for you, you're up the creek without a paddle, and good luck getting anywhere past the first round where you were last year without Jason Robertson in your lineup, because you don't have a horse like him in your lineup.
He is your number one goal scorer coming off of
100%. Who's second? Pavelski?
Yeah. And I love Jones.
And I like Pavelski. But you can't go into the season without this guy signed. Are you crazy? What are you waiting for?
He's Logan Gordon. My name is Pat Steinberg. Aaron Howell's been our outstanding producer. That'll wrap things up on hour two of Flames Talk. Thanks to Cole Schwint, who joined us a little earlier, wrapping up the Young Stars Classic. And thanks, as always, to listening. You can get Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts.